This Sunday in the church year is a name that's non-liturgical, but it reflects the season. It's usually called, the Sunday after Easter is called what? Low Sunday. And I didn't know how it would be affected here because there was also, yesterday our daughter who's 19, well she turns 19 this week, she is with 75,000 other of her closest friends at the Raymond James Stadium to see, name her, Taylor Swift. And we noticed yesterday where we live in Lakewood Ranch, I had diocesan council and some stuff at diocesan house, and I got home and my wife, Adrian, she said, well, Richard, there's not many people out. And she said, maybe they're all at Taylor. And so this morning when I left early, because living south of the bridge, it takes a while to get here, I wondered how it'd be, but I reckon some of you aren't Swifties, but that's okay. I tell you, my rude awakening was, we ran an errand and coming in and we were talking about the tickets and I had no idea what the price of the ticket was. You know, this is Olivia's 19th birthday present. And Adrian said, well, sweetie, $250. And I said, what? I saw Elvis Presley when I was a senior in high school in October of 1975 and I paid $50 for a $35 box seat, fifth box from the stage at the Charlotte Coliseum. Thank you very much. I just told Olivia, I'll tell her when she gets home, your inheritance just diminished. So anyway, it's good to be back here. It's like a homecoming here, and it's good to see faces I've known over the years. And I'm always happy when Father Brian invites me to be here. And I beg, as always, your gentleness with me if I make any mistakes in your liturgy, because every church is different, right? Would you join with me in prayer, please? God of our past, our present, and our future, we know that we do not travel alone, for you are with us and within us. You are the God of seasons and sojourns, of passage and pilgrimage, of Exodus and Emmaus. Be our companion all the days of our lives. Direct our steps along the path of goodness and growth. Be gentle with us through the seasons and transitions. Give us your power to be present to one another in compassion, mercy, and love. Be for us always a new beginning, a fresh springtime, and lead us to your eternal joy with him who is the rising dawn, Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen. Shalom. Peace be with you. So week in and week out, we exchange that peace, don't we, as part of our Eucharistic celebration. It's an ancient and sacramental greeting that is voiced each and every Eucharist, though sometimes it's not. When I first got to my North London parish as the vicar of Mill Hill, we used the 1662 prayer book at our 8 o'clock said Mass in the Lady Chapel that was eastward facing. And my first Sunday, I went to exchange the peace, and it is in the 1662, though the rubric is quite small, and I had the usual five people there, and afterwards, when I did the peace, a gentleman came up, and he was an usher at St. Paul's Cathedral, and he said, Vicar, we don't pass the peace here. I said, ooh. So I honored that for a while until I was on a pilgrimage, and then I heard Jesus speak, and he said, yes, you're going to pass the peace. So it's a different thing in different places, isn't it? Rob, I'm going to ask you to come forward. I didn't warn you about this. My wife's a New Zealander, so she grew up in the church in Aotearoa, the Church of the Land of Long White Cloud, lifelong Anglican, and so they do things differently there. But when we moved to England, it was a little more of what she was used to, a little more staid, at least, in her home parish and the parishes. We had two churches in England. And in England, one of my churches, and in New York City, when it came to the peace, and I haven't coached you on this, but the peace was very formal. It was like this. So face me. You take your, put your arms on the outside of my arms, and it's like this. Peace. Peace. Isn't that loving? Thank you. You can have a seat. But, you know... I didn't even ask him to give me his handkerchief or his watch or anything, you know. But, you know, what is it that happens when we exchange the peace? You know, sometimes it becomes more like a greeting of, hey, how are you? What's happening, right? It depends on which. Most weeks I'm in a different church almost every week, and if it's one I've got to a lot, you know, I tend to know people, and sometimes it's more than just the peace of the Lord be always with you. It gets bigger, and sometimes the time frame gets bigger, right? How long does it normally take here at Holy Innocence to pass the peace? How long? That's not bad. I've been places where it's like 5 minutes, you know. So how is it when we respond to the greeting? What does that mean? You know, oftentimes it's almost like a hi, isn't it? What's happening? How's your week been? It's a way that we catch up on the news in the pews, as it were, you know. But let's take a look at today's gospel and unpack it just a little bit and see if we can get a different understanding, a different appreciation of the peace, especially when viewed through the lens of Eastertide. Because remember, Easter is not one day. It's a season, isn't it? Right? And the meaning that it has for us as a people of the resurrection. So it's an interesting thing when we get to the gospel on the Sunday after Easter, Low Sunday. We've already had, you had your great vigil of Easter here. I know you had one. So that's your first Eucharist of Easter, and you have the wonderful, glorious readings. And then you come in for Easter Day, and you have your readings. And we're all, you know, we're joyful, and we're filled with the Spirit, and we've got lilies and flowers everywhere. And then we get to the Sunday after Easter, and we have this unusual reading. Because if you listened carefully, and yes, we even had the lesson a second time with our children's address, that it was the evening of that first day. So sometimes our lectionary and the gospel does funny things for us. So we've already celebrated Easter, the celebration of his resurrection last week, but today we're on the same day. But what? It's at nighttime, and they were in a room, and the doors were locked because they were fearful, right? And so here we have, you know, we're picking up the Easter account after the empty tomb, after Peter, after the beloved disciple, after Mary, and Mary's report that she had seen the Lord. And so we find ourselves in this closed room, presumably in Jerusalem, and the disciples are hiding. They're hiding in fear of those who've killed their friend, their teacher, or their Lord. And when we see Jesus the first time in our gospel today, he is no longer restricted by physical limitations or the rules of physics. He simply appears in this closed room, doesn't he? We can just imagine the amazement, if not awe, or even fright, that visited the disciples. And he voices that greeting that they knew so well, that Hebrew standard from time immemorial. Shalom, peace be with you. And Jesus will speak the greeting to them once more and to Thomas in our same reading today, because all of a sudden we go from the evening of the first day to a week later, and it's the one-word greeting that embodies all that is good for humanity. All earlier in John's gospel, Jesus says in 14:27, peace I leave with you. Those are powerful words. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. Words we know. And from John 16:33, I have said this to you so that you may have peace. In the world you face persecution, but take courage. I have conquered the world. Take courage. I have conquered the world. Shalom. Peace. The greeting conveys the full grace which the risen Christ can bestow upon them. And the good news is, friends, the gospel is just not a historical account. It's the same grace that can be bestowed upon us because the gospel is speaking to us, even though it was written 2 millennia ago. It's a peace which the world cannot give. It's a peace which alone can calm their troubled hearts, and if we allow it, can calm our hearts. The risen Jesus left them no doubt that he indeed had triumphed over death. dead in their fear and guilt-ridden in their abandoning of him, they have received grace and peace that has come from the Lord of all time, who was and is who to, will be. Jesus is the first fruits of victory over death. On earth, Jesus described himself how? Do you remember what he called himself? The Son of Man. And now he is the Living One. Capital L, capital O, the Living One. He was dead and is now alive forever. The risen Lord who has prepared the way for us. One of my favorite readings always for a funeral, and when I was first a priest, I remember being asked, when I was being interviewed for a position, what are your favorite services? And I said, I love the Eucharist and I love a funeral. And funerals, that reading, John, where, you know, do not be afraid. I go to prepare a place for you. In my Father's house, there are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have gone to prepare that place for you? Is that not comforting? Even if you're on the journey and you don't even accept Jesus yet, that is comforting to know that. I read a report about, or an article, I'm a dog person, so I tend to read these articles, about a dog trainer who worked with the Seeing Eye dogs. I have a neighbor about five houses down, and if you ever go down to Ellenton toward the diocesan office, you'll see there's that big sign, there's about the guide dogs. And our neighbor's dog has sired 20 puppies that they use. Teddy is his name. He's now retired. How do you retire from being a dog sire? I don't know, you know. I guess he's just resting. But the funny thing is, because I have a Basset Hound who's 75 pounds, Gumbo Yaya, a good Cajun name, and then Snickers is 17 pounds. He's Snickerdoodle Dash, and, you know, he's their brother and brother. But this article I'm going to tell you about, I know it's so true when you listen. And he was asked, what is the hardest thing to teach a seeing eye dog? What is the most challenging aspect of teaching them? And he said, it's to raise their vision. So when I first read this article, I thought about it because, you know, Gumbo, all 75 pounds of him is pretty low to the ground. And Snickers is even shorter. And I was thinking about in our house, they don't usually look for things higher than what their natural eyesight is. And so this man, the trainer, went on to say, you know, seeing eye dogs don't have problems guiding people up or over a curb or to a bus stop or to a bench or where to stand for something. But what they have trouble with is helping the person they're partnered with avoid a low-hanging branch or, say, something sticking out that the dog can't see. And so what they have to do is, you know, they have to teach the dog to look above their usual height. That is, to raise their vision. And I'd say Christians can be the same way, right? We can get too used to looking around us for the answers to our problems. I think it's a very big sign of our culture in North America. We like to solve our own problems. It's the bootstrap mentality, isn't it? We're convinced that somewhere within us or somewhere within those who are around us, that's how we can solve a problem or handle a problem. Too often, I think, we forget to look above. To look above for God as our guidance and our strength. And Paul reminds us of this in his letter to the Colossians in chapter 3, verse 2, that we should set our minds on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. In this Easter season, we can particularly rejoice that Jesus is risen from the dead. We sang all those hymns last week. We'll continue to sing such hymns this week and the week after and the week after. And that Jesus goes on before us to do what? To prepare a way for us. And each time we gather to celebrate his resurrection and the sacrament of the table, the Eucharist, we raise our vision. Shalom. Shalom. In that traditional one-word greeting, Jesus speaks of the blessings and the wholeness and the fullness of life. the aliveness of his person, the fruit of his ministry. So perhaps we might consider the exchanging of the peace as a gentle reminder, not only for what has been accomplished for us through Jesus, but also as a gentle reminder that we might raise our vision. Shalom.